Yo, my man Fife Diggy, he got something to say.
I like him brown, yellow, Puerto Rican, a Haitian. Name is Fife Dog from the Zulu Nation. So you're in the jam that we can get down. Now let's knock the boots like the group H-Town.
Live and direct, back in the 718, Brooklyn, to be exact. It's your boy Joel here for another episode of the Global Citizen Podcast. And today I have a very special guest, a bit of a throwback. Sandy Nurse, who is executive director, president, chief
executive director
of BK Rot here in Brooklyn. Sandy, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So, thank you for allowing me to interview you. So, before we get started, I just want to give a bit of a background on how I know Sandy. Sandy and I went to grad school at the New School, and we did the whatever 2-year program it was.
Yeah.
And then on my flight, my first real job after my master's, I had a job in Haiti. And I think I looked to my right and I'm like, oh shit, there's Sandy on my flight.
No.
Yeah.
I forgot all about that.
Yeah, we overlapped in Haiti. And then after Haiti, you were just like, nah, fam.
Yeah, I was like, I'm not doing that.
So, you know, we lost... lost touch a bit, but that's how it goes.
Yeah, you like moved across. You moved across like oceans.
And then you did a lot of stuff.
I did a lot of stuff.
You were pretty much really in the community here in Brooklyn, specifically like Bushwick, East New York, if I remember. So the other day, I'm reading the New Yorker. I get the New Yorker because whoever lived in my apartment before didn't cancel the subscription.
I know. So I had a place like that once.
Yeah. So I'm reading it, and I was reading. I'm like, BK Rot, Sandy. I was like, oh, shit, this is about Sandy.
This is crazy.
It was crazy. It was really cool.
You were the talk of the town.
You were the talk of the town. It was like a 2.5-page article.
No, it wasn't.
It was long.
It was like 2 paragraphs.
It was more than 2 paragraphs. I remember having to like reread a few paragraphs because, you know, I
was looking at the New Yorker. That's cool. That was such a random occurrence.
I thought that was really, really cool. And that was, from then, I was like, I have to, like, at some point, not make it awkward, hit her up and be like, hey, can I interview you on my podcast? But can you tell people what BK Rot is for those who don't know?
Yes. So BK Rot is a composting service. And so we collect food waste from businesses and households. And it's all done by bikes, e-trikes, and young people of color ages 17 to 24. So there's teenagers and young adults out there collecting garbage on bikes, and that's what I do. But we bring it back to our site in Bushwick. We take raw food waste to a couple different gardens and other places with composting systems, and we make it compost out of it. And then that compost goes to community gardens and farms. People can come collect some from the site by donation, and then we have a small retail, like a little retail arm, so we have to like 5 places.
Wow.
So we've been doing that since 2013. We do about 73 tons of food waste every year, which is like 4,000 to 5,000 pounds of food waste we process every week in like 1,000 square feet, like in the center of the neighborhood.
Wow.
So it's kind of crazy.
Which neighborhood exactly?
So we're in Bushwick.
Okay.
Yeah, like right under the Central Ave M station.
Yeah, that's really, really cool. So I mean, for me, I want to know is what made you switch from, you know, because we were in a pretty rigorous, I'm putting rigorous in quotes, international affairs program where everybody was trying to go in that direction. I am still in that direction. But what made you kind of be like tap the brakes and just kind of go in a different direction completely?
A combination of things, and sometimes I'm not always sure, but to be honest, like we were in that program, and you know, I grew up moving every 2 years of my life. I was born in Panama. My father and mom were both in the military, so I moved all the time, and I mostly lived outside of the United States. And so I just was always like, just as a young girl, I was like reading, like I have like tons of journals and notebooks I have. I was always fascinated by people in other places, and I just was really attuned to different types of struggles. And even though at the time I wasn't understanding that I was thinking about global struggles in the way I was just really fixated on war and crises. Mm. And from a really young age, which used to worry my mother, she's like, why are you always interested in this stuff? And I'm like, I don't know. It's just
it's hardship
I'm
and trauma.
Watching this and I'm looking at, you know, so I was growing up in places where a lot of populations were trying to get their lands back from the U.S. military or just trying to fight different types of struggles, where corporations were like owned huge parts of their lands that they considered sacred or important to them or have different types of value. And so my trajectory was always thinking from a global perspective, which kind of led me into the new school. I was, after college, I immediately left the United States. I was in Boston. I immediately left. I went to East Africa. I begged a professor to take me. I was like, I have to get out of here. I just want to go somewhere else. And then I was in Belgium right before I came to the U.S. And so when I was over there, my whole life path was about being in international development and international humanitarian work. So I was trying to work at the UN or trying to work at IRC or any of these big name organizations because that's where you go when you want a career doing that.
I hear that.
And you want to not be broke.
Right.
So
you still will be
you
broke.
You will be
though.
Broke, but if you get tenured in somewhere, right, like whatever. Right, yeah. Right. Most of us are broke still doing it. and I was on that track. I had taken the Foreign Service Officer exam. I passed it. I passed the interviews. I got on the registrar. I was like, great, I'm going to be like working for the State Department. I'm
Azerbaijan
gonna be a diplomat.
Somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to be like a jet setting global humanitarian. And I think my real switch was actually in Haiti. Mm. Like, that's the last time I was like, I don't ever want to do this. And no shame on anyone's game.
No.
Not at all. But I mean, so when they had me down there, the person who was kind of the head honcho for WFP down there, was not very well loved and also didn't really know what to do with me. Like, it felt like people were just being sent to do things and it wasn't really clear.
Right, a one pager.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So they were like, she was like, why don't you go visit all the field offices and write a one pager with like photos and updates about this program.
A book report, basically.
Yeah, I was like, okay. So I'm on helicopters, like,
wow.
I was like on a helicopter. Going all across to Haiti. I was in Hunch. I was in Jacmel. I was like going around to all these places. And I remember when we were in the center of the country and the field office person was like taking me around and she's like, we go to these sites. And so their whole thing was like, you know, in a crisis, we can't have dependency on aid. We need to have people need to work. They want the rice, they want the beans, they gotta work. We can't just hand it out because it's just gonna go to the market, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. And so they would do these projects, these environmental projects. They were like, listen, we're gonna mitigate climate change and mitigate future environmental disasters by building these canals and these terraced kind of walls down these areas that have landslides, which makes sense, except for the people who would do that work, they wanted the most vulnerable people in that community to be like the workers, right? And so when I go there, I'm watching these women who are like in their 60s and probably early 70s who are responsible for all these children because everyone died in Port-au-Prince.
Yeah.
And they're in flip-flops.
Yeah.
They're in flip-flops, like moving these boulders and making these terrace walls in exchange for cash and beans at the end of the month and like maybe some money on their sim. So I was like, I just was heartbroken. I was like, this is fucking insane. Mm. Can I cuss on this?
Yeah, you
okay.
can.
Okay, I was like, this is fucking crazy. Yeah. Like, what? Sorry, I was like, nail it all out.
Yeah.
But this is like, why are these women have no business like building this terrace wall? This is a massive infrastructure project. And it maybe makes sense in some way that they should be the ones who know the most about this, but it's not there's no reason for these women to be doing this work.
Right.
To prove a theory point that was developed by who? That aid and dependency is an issue. Without the context of how we got here.
Right.
This like man-made disaster. So I was like, fuck this. I can't work for the UN. It's a mess. It's just a lot of money being thrown around. I mean,
shout out to the UN.
Shout out to the UN. I was like at a dinner with like Jim Carrey in Haiti, and he was like, okay, I want to go around and like, you know, it's like all these resources and staff members to like take Jim Carrey around for photo ops.
Yeah.
For whatever. I'm sure for a lot of purposes of fundraising. But right. It just felt like there was a lot of fluff when it could have just been like, let's directly deal with some things.
Right.
So I left and I decided I want to take the summer off, and I went to, like, I had all this cash for my contract. Right. So I was like, I went to French school for the summer. I was like, I'm going to chill in New York and like refigure out what I want to do. And when I was here, I was, you know, I had a lot of money in my savings from like a 3-month contract.
Right. Cause you get the per diem,
the danger pay. Yeah. I mean, I basically was like, I'm going to retrain myself.
Mm.
And so I went to like learn carpentry and a bunch of other skills.
I remember that the social media things you were putting out. I was like, yo, she's building houses.
Yeah.
And shit.
I was like, yo, I need to like learn new skills.
Yeah.
Cause when I thought about it, I was like, I actually don't have real skills.
Mm.
I can like make one pagers.
Yeah.
I know how to like sit in meetings and hear what's going on and like send reports.
Yeah.
So that was like, no, I have to do something different. And I really, when I spent time here and I had time to like look at what's happening in New York City, I realized there's so much happening here that I just wasn't aware of as a grad student, like popping into New York City.
Right. Because like, you're going to class, you're going to your internship. Or your
job, and I'm like, I'm trying to be in the UN or I'm trying to do this. And like, I wasn't attuned to what's happening locally in the city. And I got really... I just like excited and inspired by like just like meeting housing organizers and meeting people who are like fighting police brutality, people who are like old school guerrilla gardeners, and just people who are really trying to improve the lives of the communities they live in. And I was just like, it was very, very motivating, and it felt very tangible coming from working in a place that had no tangibles. It just felt like everything was so abstract.
Yeah.
So I was really moved by that, and I just suddenly found myself like really doing hyper, hyper local work in a way that felt really good and just like really concrete. And I felt like there wasn't like weird barriers, like I'm coming in as an outsider, I'm an American, like helping out with
it was
aid.
Like your community.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm an like, you know, I don't have a hometown, so I'm not really from anywhere, and this is the longest place I've lived, so I'm gonna like do this.
Yep.
And like just try to do stuff that I would want to be doing in other places.
Mm-hmm.
So that felt really good, and like suddenly now it's like 8 years later or something, and I'm like, I've just been doing this so long, and I feel really grounded by it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
do you think that this is kind of like a corny question, but do you think like you've changed people's lives? Because like I'm from New York, and then like I was telling you, one of my best friends grew up a block over from here. And I can't remember people being into that type of stuff growing up, into like composting and even recycling to get New Yorkers to recycle. Now I think they're way more about it, but I can't tell you the people's houses I go to where they just throw everything in one garbage bag. This is just basic recycling.
Yeah.
But did you get buy-in from like community members, like original community members? Was it more of people transplant or a mix?
I think it'd be mixed. So in order to get the land that we needed, we had to get support from the community board, which is mostly elders, or folks that are retired or on their way to retirement. Lots of community organizations have partnered with us for years. We worked with young people, so we were working with the school, like the school teachers knew us. So it was definitely buy-in. I did petitioning. I went and got a bunch of signatures from all the houses on the block and the businesses on the block, like the immediate surrounding area of the space. eventually we got support from our city council members who helped us get the space fully. So, I mean, the process of, like, having an idea and being like, yo, let's do a composting site here, actually was, like, a 2.5-year process. Mm. Of even though we were able to open in another space, in a church space, like, to get the space we're in now, we had to build, like, a whole campaign around it. So it was definitely buy-in. You know, people were paying to have a weekly collection from their house. So those people were definitely white, mm-hmm. Folks who were already in the choir of, like, composting.
Right.
Came from wherever that was, like, more accustomed to the, you know, they were just more accustomed to it. But also, like, the young people we hired, like, all of these kids knew how to comp. Like, they had those skills in their history, just not in New York. So,
yeah.
Like, a lot of the kids we worked with were coming from the islands or, like, from the Caribbean diaspora or Central South America, and they were already familiar with composting. They just hadn't done it in the city.
Right.
So there was a disconnect there, but there is, I would say, the buy-in to start up and move, and we sustain those relationships and grow those relationships in all sorts of different ways. But who, like, the businesses we serve and who's, like, coming there and utilizing the service in mass is generally transplants. People
yeah.
who are newer to the city, who are younger, they're more knowledgeable about
compost
or just, like, environmental sustainability
yeah.
practices. So there is a disconnect there. It's unfortunately just a big, big challenge.
I hear that.
But I also think the city has put a lot of money and resources into just, like, trying to educate households.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really hard. There's, like, so many people here.
Yeah.
Like, New York City is already running the largest composting operation in the country. And
in
it's
the
not,
country, really?
Yeah.
More than
LA.
California.
Yeah.
Huh.
I mean, by the city. Uh-huh. Like, the city is running the largest organics, like, household collection program.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not even capturing the full city. Like, Bushwick has never been served
mm-hmm.
with the brown bin. So, I mean, I think in terms of, like, changing people's lives, I mean, we work with young people who are maybe not going to go to college, maybe don't have a plan, maybe, like, they were a little bit awkward in high school and didn't really know, or they weren't captured somehow and engaged. But then we also work with people who are, like, definitely, like they know what they're doing and they're looking for work. So I think folks who come through the program, they, you know, they can land in different places. But I mean, there was definitely nothing I ever had access to.
Right.
So
composting was brought up to me one time. I was visiting a friend in San Francisco, and when I went to go throw out his garbage, he, like, chased me down.
Yeah.
He was like, no, this is how you have to do it, because he was talking to, because he's from Chicago but lived here and
yeah.
moved to Cali, and talked about how he was pretty much shamed by his neighbors for doing
yeah.
it the wrong
yeah.
way.
Yeah.
So it definitely is a new thing. Can you talk a little bit more about kind of the young people who work for you? Because I remember in the article, in the
yeah.
New Yorker plug that I read about you,
mm-hmm.
It highlighted one guy who was kind of, he was kind of the other spotlight in the story.
Victor.
Yeah, Victor.
Yeah. So Victor was our first person.
Mm.
He worked with us since he was 16.
Wow.
He's now 24.
Wow.
He's, like, aging out of the program.
Yeah.
He's amazing. He was a very shy kid. He was, like, really into anime. Like,
mm-hmm.
didn't know how to talk to girls, like,
right.
really, you know, like,
this picture,
like,
baby, yeah,
mad
yeah.
shy, you know, it's just, like, awkward. But we met him, he was doing a summer youth employment program,
mm-hmm.
and he was working on a farm in the back of the school, actually down the street here, Bushwick campus,
mm-hmm.
so just right here. And we went up to the instructor of the program, this woman Maddie, and we were like, is there someone that would be interested? And she was like, Victor would definitely be interested. He loves doing this outdoor stuff, but, you know, it's not really, like, easy for him to get a job. So we started working with him. He was so quiet. He barely talked. I was like, oh, no, this guy is, he's not going to survive here.
Mm.
But now he, like, I mean, they run the entire program. This other woman, Sonia, works there. She was with Green City Force, which is another kind of similar program, but they do, like, hardcore they have like an apprenticeship, like an AmeriCorps kind of style program. Yeah. Ours is way more laid back than that. And so she's been working with us for almost 2 years. She runs our entire residential program. I don't even know what's happening with it, you know? I'm like, how many people are signed up?
Right.
She tells me all the stuff, but I'm not in it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the service itself, there's been so many other kids. This kid, Mikael, who is now in school in Buffalo, and he's studying IT. He wants to be, like, an app developer. Trayvon, who was such a great kid, and unfortunately, because of the immigration policy, he had to move to Canada. So
wow.
He, like, it was a different kind of story, but... So, like, so many, like, young men and women just, like, work there, and they're just, like, surprisingly really interested in the job, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, but I think working with your hands like that and seeing kind of, like, a direct, like, effect and how it positively affects the environment when anyone could realize now that climate change is a real thing.
Right.
You have to be kind of, like...
Right. And they're teaching it in the schools. These kids are, like... I mean, most of, and there's actually like the Academy of Environmental Leadership down here. So it's not like young people don't know what's going on. I think the issue is like there's nowhere for them to work
mm-hmm.
and be impactful.
Yeah.
So there's not enough jobs for young people, particularly young people of color, who aren't in these like big programs on sustainability and these, they're not getting like under, like bachelor's and master's degree in it. They're young people who like, coming out of school trying to figure out what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But they're interested in this stuff. There's just nowhere for it to go. Hey, can you chill? I'm trying to do this podcast. Can you chill? Hi.
I guess one of my final questions is, in doing this work, what would you say are the kind of the top three local issues that you come across in doing this work? So you've already talked about like a little bit immigration, a little bit like access to jobs and education, but what would you say are like the top three issues that in doing this job you've come across a lot and that makes you want to do other things besides what you're doing now to kind of maybe tackle those issues?
Yeah, I mean, I think some of the main job issues are, you know, when we started this, the thing is that it sounds crazy. It sounds like we're not doing a lot when you think about, like, how much stuff can you move on a bike?
Mm-hmm.
But actually, it's really important that there's a crazy amount of emissions that are involved in transporting waste.
Yeah.
And it actually creates a huge impact on our health. So, for example, North Brooklyn alone hosts, like, almost 40% of the city's waste infrastructure.
Wow.
So, and the remainder is really held in the Bronx, the South Bronx, right? Mm. These are...
Growing up, we thought it was Staten Island.
Yeah, it was Staten Island for a while, but that stuff, once that stuff got shut down, a lot of that infrastructure is here now. Mm-hmm. And so we have, you know, 60 waste trucks an hour pummeling through this neighborhood. Most of the waste trucks that are in this community, that are in use on the road right now are... older than 2007, so they're like, there's a certain EPA standard that they're not meeting.
Right.
They're getting like 3 miles per gallon, right? They're dinosaur fucking trucks.
Yeah.
They all hover over here. There's waste transfer facilities. There's waste management. There's the city's infrastructure. So there's just a lot of unjust burden that this community has to deal with. And there's real effects. So, like, we have some of the highest rates of child asthma in this community. We have some of the highest rates of avoidable adult asthma, like asthma that develops later. We have some of the highest rates of PM2.5, which is...
What is that?
That is fine particulate matter, which is one of the worst pollutants.
Mm.
And nitrogen oxides, which is, like, it's just bad shit, right? It's all bad shit. We should be breathing it.
Yeah.
And it's all over the city. So right now, some of the big challenges is that we know there are a lot of groups. So we were the first bike-powered operation in the city. Now there are 4 others. And we help them all start up.
Yeah.
So this is a growing industry. And once you're inside the logistics of it, it actually works and it makes sense. There's a lot of reasons why a bike can collect from a smaller business than a truck, right? Like especially a big ass truck on these smaller streets, right? When you have newer businesses popping up, like new coffee shops and stuff that are in a deep residential area, you don't need a truck for that. Trucks kill people. Some of the other issues are, so like the public sanitation service is predominantly led by white workers. They're pensioned, like city sanitation workers are some of the top jobs in the city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Alternatively, or on the inverse, the private sanitation workforce is predominantly black and brown. A lot of second chance workers. They are paid the worst. They have the least amount of protections. They have no unions. They have sham unions. Like, there's so many worker practices that are just really bad. And so right now, I think what's happening in the city is this like big reform effort. And so some of the, like, I guess the main challenge is that, like, not enough people understand the connections between waste and pollution.
Mm-hmm.
From, like, the way we deal with it also is, like, a huge part of, like, greenhouse gas emissions in the city.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big connect. There was also no regulatory environment when we started. Everyone was like, what is this? Bikes, teenagers, food, like, this is some hippie shit.
Yeah.
And we were like, it's, and like, also because we were working with young people, they're like, oh, this is like a cute thing. Like, this is a great little model. And I'm like, yeah, but actually, like, we're paying really good wages and we're moving a lot of material. And if we had certain licenses and permits to access other types of city infrastructure that exist, we would be killing it.
Right.
So we had to fight for a really long time to create the political space for us to be in, and also the regulatory environment. So, I think some of the main challenges are just, like, you know, recycling rates are still really low. I think only like 20% of the city actually recycles.
Yeah. Yes.
Just like plastics, you know, like, so adding food waste on top of that to people's list of things and shit they're supposed to care about is really fucking challenging. And
because you have to act to actually compost, you have to do the efforts. I'm like when you recycle, you can take it to the recycling bin, you can separate those things, but the compost is like it's you that has to take your waste somewhere,
right unless you're in a district that has the brown bin,
right
but even in the districts that have it, you know, a lot of building owners associate this with rats. They don't want that shit. They're like, we don't want this shit. Like,
mm-hmm.
We got a whole other bin happening. So a lot of times it's contaminated with, like, people put diapers and VCRs in them.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, we're in a huge city and there's a huge disconnect between, I think a lot of people don't have space in their lives to think about where this stuff goes and just like how directly it's impacts us.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that it's just like, it's not going away. Like, we're shipping it to like China and China's like, we don't want this anymore. And then like North Carolina, South Carolina, like, we're not taking your waste anymore. Like, we're running out of places to send this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we're spending, it's one of those cities' biggest budget items. Like, all that money could be going to like education and other things, but it's going to like literally like putting trash in containers and shipping it somewhere else.
Yeah.
It's just, I think there's just like a big cultural like hump that we need to get over.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have any idea of like how to do it other than just to keep putting money into like education and awareness and hope in like 10 years kids will like have taught their parents.
Mm.
And at that point, hopefully. Like, who knows, it's even fast enough, you know?
You're making me want to compost now. I'm feeling some type of way that I don't do it.
Yeah, I mean, you should. I just moved here, mm-hmm. and, like, there's no recycling or anything. I've turned into one of those people. I'm just like, where's the recycling?
Dirt. I remember I worked somewhere where they used to keep the composting. Someone would compost and they would put it in the freezer.
Yeah, yeah.
The communal freezer, and I used to get so pissed.
Yeah, because you have to empty that shit.
Yeah, but they were, you know, kind of slack on it. But now I think it's like, I could have chilled out because they're actually doing something good.
Yeah, but it's one of those things, like, the burden is on individuals, right? Like, the burden is all on us to deal with this stuff. And it just feels like it needs better ideas to get it done, like...
But just make things, like, legally force people to do it. That's what
enforcement needs to happen, and just more convenient. I mean, like, that's why we were so successful with our service. It was like, there are people who want to do it, but like, storing it in the freezer, who's gonna fucking take care of it? Like, okay, now it's like week four and the freezer's full of fucking bags, like, what's up? Somebody's got, you know, and so it's just like it. Let's just deal with this, like, and people are willing to pay for it. So, you know, I don't know, it's a little bit about convenience. It's also about like building up appreciation and value for like waste workers and like the places that have to deal with the burden of it,
right?
Which is like the global hat, and also like at the local level, like the communities that have to deal with it are, you know, generally communities of color. They're low income, you know. So it's a big issue, but I think it's just like the last thing on people's mind.
Mm-hmm. Last question for you. Where do you see BK Rot in 5 years?
You know, I really see BK Rot as accessing more land and utilizing more technology to just be able to process more food waste locally. Also, like, trying to use the output, really working with people to, like, amend the soils in the city. We have huge concentrations of lead. North Brooklyn is in a lead belt of just like lead and other heavy metals. Like, people are really excited to grow their food, and you've got all these people who are like, yeah, like, we're doing it, we're like gardening and
doing, like, it, man.
Yeah, you're doing it, but like, did you check your soil first? Because this shit is nasty. This shit is so nasty. I'm like, I really need you to like test your soil before you grow anything. Before
you start growing tomatoes,
right? So we're really trying to like spread the word about that, and also be like, cool, if you want to do it, here's some stuff to do it with. But yeah, I would love to see like 100 workers out there just like doing it, collecting stuff, processing. I'd love to be able to collect like 2 million, 5 million pounds of food waste and have it all zero emissions.
Yeah,
in like kind of a decentralized model of accessing spaces and bringing the material to larger scale facilities that can handle it. But you know, the city has to invest in some of those facilities, so they know they need to. It's just, you know, when.
Hopefully we're on our way there. Do you want to plug BK Rot, anything on Instagram, website?
Yes, definitely. Definitely follow BK Rot on Instagram. I think our Instagram is dope. It's hashtag BK_ROT. We're on Twitter, but it's like kind of linked to everything else. It's not cute. I mean, it's like when, you know, when you like link stuff, I'm like the worst at this. You like link it and you're like,
Do that for this podcast. I don't really love Facebook that much anymore, but I still
do. Our Facebook and our Instagram is pretty active, but the Twitter is like
not there yet.
It's super lackluster. We also have, every Sunday, we have a food scrap drop-off, so you want to bring your household food waste every Sunday, 12 to 3, at 1278 Myrtle Avenue. We're there, rain or shine, snow, or 100-degree heat. We were out there. There was a kid out there today. I was like, I was bringing him water.
Rough.
But he was out there, you know? I mean, when you pay people good money, like, they work. So, so yeah, definitely check us out. We're always taking donations, and we have tons of compost.
Cool. Sandy, thank you so much. This was a lot of fun.
Thanks, Joel.
Check us out. Check me out. Check it out. Global Citizen Podcasts, iTunes, all that good stuff. Peace out, y'all.
Yo, my man Fife Diggy, he got something to say.
I like him brown, yellow, Puerto Rican, and Haitian. Name is Fife Dork from the Zulu Nation.